Okay, so based on that intro, it should be clear I really have no qualifications to be giving this talk, but other than being a parent and kind of thinking these are fun things to think about. So I thought I would talk a little bit. Is this too loud? It's okay. Okay. I thought I would talk a little bit just about this idea of self-awareness, self-reflection, kind of thinking about who you are. I tend to be a pretty practical person, and if you had asked me early in my life what I thought about self-awareness, I probably would have rolled my eyes, said, you know, I don't have time for that. But as I've gotten older, I have really been kind of continually hit with how many people struggle with situations and relationships because they really aren't taking a good look at who they are or even just appreciating their inherent value as a person. I think there are massive amounts of insecurity that come from not really being comfortable with who you are and not feeling in control of your own life. I've also really seen the value of paying attention to self-awareness in my own life and the benefits that can come from really trying to look at yourself honestly and think about what you might want to change, what you like, what maybe you don't like so much. I think this came up for those of you who were here a couple of weeks ago. In particular, I was painfully shy and afraid of new things when I was a kid, and honestly well into my teenage years. And the truth is, I know that I am naturally about as introverted a person as it is possible to be. So I can kind of embrace that now, and I've learned a lot of ways to make myself more comfortable and really enjoy the positive aspects of lots of social interaction that I originally might have been afraid of or uncomfortable with. And I think that's come from gaining some level of self-awareness. So I think we can do some really concrete things to help our kids start to think about the concept of knowing themselves in a way that I think can make a pretty big difference to the quality of their life going forward. So I'm going to try to do some slides here. Let's see. Do we have this? There we go. Okay, so we can start with what is self-awareness. So I've just put some ideas up on the slide. You know, I think it's the ability to examine and understand yourself kind of relative to the world around us. Maybe one way to think about it is just that it's really being honest with yourself, having some kind of objective view of who you are and how you fit into things. In the context of helping our kids, I kind of think we can think about it as helping them begin to think about their own thinking. Rather than assuming that their emotions and their actions are defined by the circumstances around them, we can aim to help them think about the choices that they have in front of them and the choices that they can make a little more purposefully. So why should we care about this? Let's see. I'm not very good at this. There. So there is lots of research, actually, that high levels of self-awareness have been linked to personal development, healthy relationships, and effective leadership. You know, I think if we're able to look at ourselves honestly, then we can actually decide if there are things we want to improve, and we can try to improve ourselves. And that kind of control over our own lives is what leads, I think, to kind of a higher level of contentment and satisfaction with what we can accomplish. I think also, ultimately, if we have a more objective view of ourselves, we can be less driven by what other people think about us. And we're actually also more likely to be able to improve our external circumstances if we are able to look at ourselves and our role in those circumstances rather than waiting for somebody else to fix something or to change something. So I think it does actually lead to a greater ability to positively impact the people around us. So, assuming we buy into this and think this is worth talking about, how do we do it? There's, I think, a million different ways, and you guys may all have great ideas that you're already thinking about. But I came up in the interest of providing some practical advice. I came up with three things I thought it might be. Whoops, that didn't work. Interesting to talk about. So these are the three things: helping your child develop their own sense of agency, and I'll talk about what that means, practicing delayed gratification, and creating and protecting quiet time. So let's start with the first one, this creating a sense of agency. The idea here is to help your child have a sense of control over his or her own life. The point is kind of to help your kids learn and process the idea that they're not passive observers in their own life. They can be actively in control of what they want to have happen. And for me, it's really important to recognize that it's actually pretty easy for our kids, especially our younger kids, to feel like passive observers. If you think about what percentage of their day are they told what to do by some adult, right? Between parents and school and coaches and everything else, a lot of their day is spent in a way that feels like they are just told exactly where to go and what to do. So I think if you start with kind of thinking about their perspective on that, it makes it easier to think about why this is worth spending some time on. At any age, children and adults, I think, a critical piece of ultimate happiness is recognizing that we can make choices about our own life. I think there's lots of adults who get into situations where they feel trapped, right? You feel like, oh my gosh, I don't like the way things are and I have no options. And the truth is, if you train yourself and start to train your kids to view every situation, there's always options, right? We might not like them, but there's always some kind of option. And being able to identify that and take some control over your life, I think, is really helpful. So the number one tool for getting started with this is just giving your child opportunities to make choices, to exercise their own decision-making skills. And I've actually talked about this in the context of other mom-to-mom talks also, but I think it really applies here as well. At whatever age your kid is, make sure they have lots of opportunities to make choices about their own day. And this is actually easier than it sounds without making huge changes in your own life and what you want to have happen. At some level, it does mean giving up increasing control as the parent, especially as your child gets older. You do have to actually give up some of the control you have over what they're doing and how they're doing it. So for some of us, that's harder than others, and I would put myself in that category. I tend to have lots of opinions about the way things should go. And so if you fall in that category, then I think it's worth thinking about the benefits of loosening up a little bit. One of the authors I read as I was trying to think through some of this stuff suggested that we try to think of our role as parents as consultants rather than as managers. And I thought that was actually a really good way to think about it, right? We don't need to be managing and telling them what to do all the time. We need to be giving them some opportunity to make choices and be there to back them up or guide them or put some parameters around the choices. So what are some examples? If you have really young kids, you'll be amazed at how easy and satisfying this is once you start thinking about it, right? You can give them choices about everything. And when they're young, you can just make the choices all things that you are totally fine with, right? Do you want to eat your snack in the red bowl or the blue bowl? Literally, that level of decision making will give them, at a young age, if you have a toddler, that's a great place to start. Do you want to wear sneakers or boots when we go out today? Do you want to use the bathroom upstairs or downstairs? This was a moment of brilliance in my life. When I had toddlers and I was potty training them and we needed to get in the car, if I said you have to go to the bathroom, my daughter would say no. If I said, do you want to use the bathroom upstairs or downstairs, she would happily pick one and go. I mean, it was like magic. Should we have chicken or hamburgers for dinner tonight? They can be choices that impact other people in the family too. Anything you do, you can add choice to let your toddler start getting the idea of having some control over what's happening to them. As they get older, you do need to give increasing control to them, and you may have to give up a little bit of how exactly you want things to go. But I think it's worth it. You know, homework is a great place to start. If you have a kid who has homework, especially if they are recently hitting the age where they have homework, it's very tempting to decide exactly when and how they should do their homework. I did this when my daughter first started getting homework. I like to get things done and then relax. So I would, they'd walk in the door, I'd say, have a snack, let's do your homework. And it took me way too long to realize that, one, I wasn't giving her any choice, which is bad in and of itself, and two, if I let her pick, it went a million times better. You know, it was really helpful for her to take a break, to play outside, to watch a TV show, to do something else. And then she was fine to sit down and do her homework, and it was on her terms and her motivation, and it was a million times better. You know, depending on your child and how easy or hard it is to get them to do homework, you might have to make the choices slightly different, right? If you've got a child who's going to take care of it on their own, you can just say, hey, what's your plan? When do you think you're going to do your homework? If you have a kid who's going to say, never, I don't want to do my homework, then you set a few more options, and they need to pick one of the options in front of them. But however your kid is, if you think about it a little, you can come up with at least a couple of choices that they are then able to have some control over. And you can do this in any area of your kid's life. What activities do they want to sign up for after school? What clothes do they want to wear, right? As your kids get a little older, they all are going to want to pick out their own clothes. So let them do that within the realm of whatever your rules are. Summer activities, once you get into high school, what classes do you want to take? What levels do you think you should be in? All of those are things that your kids should be able to play some role in having some control over. In addition to just giving your kids opportunities to make choices in front of them, I actually think it's also helpful to get them practicing identifying choices that they have in various situations when they might not initially even recognize there is a choice. I think beginning at a very early age, we can help our kids start to recognize the existence of choices that they actually do have control over in situations where they might initially think they have no choice. And I actually think this skill is one of the most important for happy adulthood also, is to feel like whatever situation you're in, there you are making choices. If you choose to do nothing, that's a choice, right? So the ultimate goal is to counter the feeling your child may have that there's nothing I can do. Right? There's always something. There's always some choice. And if you can view circumstances, whatever your bad circumstance is, if you can view it in a way that gives you choices, it makes it a little less bad. It gives you a little more control. So just a couple of examples. If, you know, starting out young, toddler age, say you have a kid who doesn't want to take a nap, right? Has that not happened to everybody? You can help your toddler start to think in a way by creating acceptable choices, right? You need them to take a nap, but you can't actually make them go to sleep, right? So what is the reality of the choices? Without you changing anything, they can lay down, go to sleep, and take a nap. They could sit in their room on the bed quietly and do whatever they want. You could even point out that your kid does have the choice to stay in their room and yell and scream for the entire nap time, but that's not going to change anything. They're still going to have to be in their room. So right there are three choices that your toddler has that haven't changed anything about what is going to happen, but you're using the language of giving them some kind of power to say, okay, I actually do have choices. And maybe you even say, look, if you pick the choice to at least sit in your room quietly, then we can do something fun afterwards. That kind of thing, just putting the labels of these choices that they have onto existing circumstances, that gives your kid a lot more power in their own mind than to say, you have to take a nap and you have no choice. And in fact, you haven't changed the circumstances at all, right? It's all the same. You're still not letting them run free rampant in the house or watch TV or go outside, but you have given labels to the choices they already have. You know, what if your elementary schooler has a fight with a friend or feels snubbed by a friend? They come home and just feel bad, and they think, there's nothing I can do. My friend was mean to me. Well, there actually are choices, and you can sit down with them and say, hey, let's think about what are the different things you could do, right? You could tell your friend how you feel. You could decide to spend time with another friend. Maybe you invite somebody else over after school. You could hang out with other people at school. You could decide your friend was just having a bad day and maybe try to move on and not make it such a big deal. All of those are choices that your child may not really think about the fact that they have, but if you can set them out as options, I think it starts to help them thinking through that kind of perspective. you know, and any age, your high schooler, say your high schooler doesn't get the elective they wanted, that they signed up for. You know, it's easy for a kid to just feel disappointed and kind of stuck. Well, I don't have any control over it. I signed up for this. They didn't give it to me. It's a good, I think, opportunity to point out to your child, well, if you aren't too upset about it, then fine, you can take the new elective and move on. If you are really upset, you could make an appointment and go talk to your guidance counselor. Or maybe you could change one of your other classes to make room so this works in your schedule. It's just kind of empowering to be able to look at the options. And, you know, your child might say, I don't want to do any of those things. And that's fine, but then they're choosing not to do any. That's a choice in and of itself, which is fine. So I think the point is just to get in the habit of using language that identifies these kinds of choices. Sorry, this is not staying on. Last thing on this idea of a sense of agency, I think we can also think about this same basic idea of laying out choices for our kids, not just in the context of actions, but also how they want to choose to feel and kind of react emotionally to different circumstances. I actually think this could be a whole talk in and of itself, but consider the idea that your child learns, rather than saying to themselves, how do I feel right now, your kid could say, how do I want to feel right now, right? And it's a similar idea. Someone calls you a mean name, you have a fight with your friend. Well, you could feel angry, you could feel sad, you could feel sorry for how that person must be feeling, that they needed to be mean. You could feel grateful that you didn't do that to somebody else. There's a million different things you could feel. And it's the same idea of kind of putting labels on those and giving kids the chance to recognize it's not up to that friend to make them feel sad or angry. They can decide how they want to feel in response to something. And this is not to say that it's ever wrong for your child to feel sad or angry in those circumstances. I think it's just helpful to let them recognize that's one of many things they could feel, and they might want to choose to feel something different. Okay, so anyway, the whole point of this is I just think that letting kids have these choices, recognize choices, and make choices is very empowering in a world in which they start out feeling very much like they are not in charge of what's going on in their own lives. Okay, so the next thing I'm going to move on here is the idea of delayed gratification, which also probably could be its own whole talk. But how is this related to self-awareness? I think part of self-awareness is understanding and evaluating your own desires. What do I want? Why do I want it? Will I still want it tomorrow? And learning to distinguish between kind of in-the-moment pleasure and more significant desire, long-term desires, I think is an important part of understanding ourselves. I also think, in and of itself, in my own experience, practicing delayed gratification with your kids will just help them to be generally happier in life. So the idea of delayed gratification is just avoiding the temptation of something right in front of you so you can hold out for something substantially better down the line. And so the goal is to help our kids learn how to endure some kind of short-term discomfort in the interest of holding out for something they want even more. I think one helpful way to think about this is that it's about training our kids to get used to the idea that their goal should not be to be instantly satisfied all the time. That's really not, even in an ideal world, if you could have everything you ever wanted, your goal shouldn't be to be instantly satisfied all the time. It shouldn't be to avoid pain or hardship at all costs, because that's really not how we're going to get to a place where our most significant goals are being achieved. Most of you have probably heard about the famous marshmallow test that this guy Walter Mischel did. This is decades ago now. For those of you who don't know it, he took four-year-old kids and put them in a kind of a test room at a table and put one marshmallow in front of them and said, you have a choice. You can either eat the marshmallow now, or I'm going to leave the room and come back in a little while, and if you can wait and not eat the marshmallow till I come back, then I'll give you two. You can have two marshmallows. And the research showed a real advantage. They followed the kids for years after this, for decades. And the kids who were able to wait for the two marshmallows showed improved skills. It's up here on the bottom of the slide. They were able to keep a goal in mind better. They were able to inhibit responses that interfered with the goal. And they were able to use their attention in a way that kept them going towards that goal. Just a quick aside, I don't want to get into it, but for anybody who pays attention to this stuff, there actually has been some additional very recent research related to this marshmallow test that has expanded it and brought up a whole bunch of new interesting topics. In particular, the new research provides a lot of insight into the role of poverty and affluence in connection to delayed gratification. And it really follows a lot of common sense if you think about it. A kid who is not assured that the two marshmallows will come later, is obviously the smart option is to take the one now. So there's a lot of interesting additional stuff that I'm not going to get into. I just want to tell you in case you're interested in looking at it. The whole topic is a lot more complicated, I think, than what I'm summarizing, but it doesn't take away from the fact that for purposes of today, I think we can really talk about the real benefits of delayed gratification and getting our kids used to practicing that. So how do we do that? How do I use my iPad is the first question. Obviously, delayed gratification is more than just the idea of buying or not buying things, but with kids, I think that's a very good practical place to start as you're looking for tools for teaching delayed gratification. And the first thing I would say is that for those of you who kind of get worried hearing this term, it is not about denying your child everything they've ever wanted. It really is not. It's not about being a Grinch. It's not about making life unfun or never buying anything. I have always been a huge believer in delayed gratification, both for myself and my kids. I think my husband would say I might have been a little too into delayed gratification. When we first got married, we had not a lot of money, and our ideas on how to spend it were a little bit different. But we have come to a good place over the years, and I think we both appreciate that it is a really important thing for kids to be able to practice. So the way I would think about it is the ultimate goal, again, it's not about being a Grinch and never doing anything fun. It's really about the ability to be happy choosing not to have something, or not to have it right away, at least. It's about giving yourself or your kids a chance to determine that maybe you don't want something quite as much as you thought you did in any particular moment, and that going without it now might actually lead to something better later. I did like this cartoon. I don't know if you can see it. What do we want? Delayed gratification. When do we want it? At some future time to be determined later. It is not the easiest thing to talk to kids about because of that. But I have some practical tips that I hope might be helpful. When my kids were really little, I'm guessing they were like everybody's kids, and they loved going to the toy section in Target and looking at things and inevitably finding things that they absolutely could not live without. So one of the things I would do when they were younger is on occasion I would tell them ahead of time, you know, if we were going to Target, I would say, okay, look, we're going to go to the toy section and we're going to look around and we're going to look for great ideas of things that you might like the next time it's a time to get something. And we would go look, and they would get really excited about something. And when they got excited, I would too. I would say, you know what, that looks awesome. That's a great choice. That looks like it would be really fun. Let's remember this. Let's see if you still want this just as much tomorrow. You know, I think this looks great. If you decide that this is really the thing you want, then maybe when we come back next week, we'll buy it. It was not, you know, with a toddler, you're not looking in September for a present in December. It can be a short term thing. It can be a day. I mean, honestly, it could be a couple hours. It could be we're going to come back later. The idea is just to separate the wanting it with the getting it by some amount of time. You know, I could affirm the things that they wanted and the fact that they wanted something. So again, it's not about saying you are wrong or bad to want stuff. Everybody wants stuff, right? There's nothing inherently wrong with that. It's just about controlling what do you do when you want something. I will say, as you probably can all recognize, that process took a lot more time than just avoiding the toy aisle. So, you kind of have to plan ahead that that is something you are willing to invest in for an outing. And it does not mean that you don't have kids leaving upset because they wanted to buy it now. But honestly, telling a kid, you know what, we'll think about this and come back tomorrow or next week, is a lot easier than, no, you can't have this. Even a young kid can fairly quickly understand the difference between those two things. As kids get older, certainly if you know your child has some kind of long-term goal, something that they want to purchase that's more expensive, something they're saving up for, then an important tool in helping them resist immediate desires is to remind them to focus on that long-term, bigger thing, right? Remember, if you don't buy this now, you're that much closer to getting the thing you want. And that's an important tool. If I can buy this for you right now, or if we don't buy this, then we're going to be able to get something else sooner or something else bigger. Making choices about how you're spending your money is an important part of this. And I do think at any age, just the act of waiting some amount of time between deciding that you want something and actually getting it. That whether it's a day, a week, longer than that, whatever it is, I think separating the act of wanting something from the act of actually getting it is a really good tool for your kids to get used to. And the truth is, if you do that, sometimes they will continue to want something hugely, and they'll be thrilled when it's time to go back and get it. And you can really focus on the fun of looking forward to something during the interim, right? Aren't you excited? We're going to go get this. I'm excited for you. It's going to be really fun. They may also decide, it was cool while I was standing there in the aisle, but I don't actually care that much anymore. And that is a really good realization for a kid to have, that just because I wanted something so badly in the moment, if they can have an experience of a few days later saying, maybe I don't really want it as much as I thought I did, just having that experience is really valuable for them going forward. Another example, kind of connected to this, but just creating context in your family. We often joke about the idea that often one of my kids will just announce, I need X, right? And whatever X is almost always not something they need. My favorite family example ever is my daughter, I think she must have been, maybe 7 or 8, walked downstairs one day and announced to the rest of us, I need a rolling office desk chair. And I just burst out laughing. We turned it into a family joke. It's kind of ridiculous for anyone to say, I need a rolling office desk chair, right? And she was adamant that she really needed this. We just laughed all the time. And honestly, every once in a while now, she'll say something and I'll be like, oh, you need that just like you need a rolling office desk chair, So I think the distinction between want and need is also a useful tool and doesn't have to be this kind of terrible lecture of, don't you appreciate all the things you have, right? That's what I could have said when she said she needed a chair. It was kind of what I was thinking, but it actually was so funny, I just laughed first. One other different example, not related to money, you want to think about delayed gratification across the board. I think that spending money is the easiest place to start, but you want to help your kids learn to delay other kinds of gratification too. And, obviously this is within reason, but if you have a kid in the backseat of the car who is claiming they're starving to death, think for a minute, how close am I to home? Do I need to throw a granola bar in the back seat, or can I say to my kid, hey, we're going to be home in 5 minutes, can you wait? Right? Obviously nobody wants a starving to death kid. My kids fall apart without food. So you have to do this within reason. But it's worth thinking about. My kids, for some reason, get unbelievably thirsty in the middle of the grocery store all the time. And I literally, they're old enough now, I just say to them, okay, do you need me to buy you a bottle of water, or can you wait the five, we live 5 minutes from the grocery store, if that. Can you wait 5 minutes until we get home? And honestly, I get different answers on different days. And if they say, I really can't stand it, I say, fine, go buy a bottle of water. But think about it before you decide that you really can't wait 5 minutes to get something to drink. So again, it's this idea of practicing having some desire without fulfilling it immediately. And there's nothing wrong with the desire, right? There's certainly nothing wrong with being hungry or thirsty. There's nothing wrong with wanting to buy something. But I think we can help our kids be in control of their own lives and their own goals when we help them separate the experience of wanting something with immediately getting it. Okay. Next thing. Okay, so the last one, the last topic I have here is this idea of creating and protecting quiet time. So there is a huge amount of research that completely unstructured quiet time is invaluable to our kids. For many reasons, including the chance to actually think about who they are and who they want to be. And it's not that I think when you put a kid in a quiet room, they suddenly sit down and think, who do I want to be? Mm-hmm. Right? That's not what you're going for. But the way that their minds will work in the quiet is actually helping them figure out those questions, even if they don't know that's what they're doing. Many of our kids have increasingly little, if any, time where they can just sit quietly or wander by themselves with their own thoughts. And as a result, there are a lot of people who are really not comfortable just being by themselves with their own thoughts. I read something, this is somewhat terrifying, but I read a recent study demonstrated that when given the option, and I don't know what age these people were, but it said young men and young women, 64% of young men and 15% of young women chose to give themselves a mild electric shock rather than sit in the quiet by themselves. So they're in a room by themselves, and the only thing in the room with them is an option to shock themselves, and they just can't stand to sit quietly by themselves, so they picked shocking themselves. That seems crazy, right? So this kind of quiet time is really critical for lots of things. Letting your brain just think about yourself, think about your day, think about problems that you have that might need to be resolved, evaluating your interactions with other people. Gee, what happened there? What actually happened? How did I leave feeling? How did the other person leave feeling? Considering the experiences and feelings of other people in your life. I find that this happens to me all the time. I space out in the shower all the time because I end up like running through things. What happened? You know, what do I need to do? How should I handle something? You know, what email should I write? I'm drafting it in my head while I'm soaping my hair, you know. So the more your kids get some of this time, the more their brains get a chance to kind of do these kinds of thought process. I don't know how to keep this staying on. There's this quote up here, if it comes back. Daydreaming leads to creativity, and creative activities teach us agency, the ability to change the world, to mold it to our liking, to have a positive effect on our environment. This really is the all-important work of personal reflection, and it just cannot happen if we are constantly bombarded with information and tasks, and in particular now technology. This kind of quiet reflection is really critical to organizing our own thoughts and evaluating ourselves and other people. One author I read refers to this idea as radical downtime, and I kind of like that because I think for a lot of us, just doing this feels kind of radical and is a change, but it's also, I think, really worth it. One of the most important reasons our kids need this quiet time is so they have time to do nothing and just let their minds wander. That actually is, if you can get your kid to just daydream and sit there and think and do nothing, there's a lot of evidence about the benefits of daydreaming. When we let our minds wander and daydream, what we're actually doing is organizing, processing, and evaluating feelings about who we are and who we want to be. In fact, one of the tools that's often suggested for practicing delayed gratification is to take time to daydream, because it actually reminds us of what we really want rather than what is right in front of us. Again, not to throw my own children under the bus, but one of my daughters, this is a long time ago now, she was maybe 8 years old, went upstairs to take a shower. She had come home from soccer or something, I don't know what. She went upstairs to get herself in the shower. And I am not kidding you, 30 minutes later, I walked upstairs and she was buck naked in the middle of her room staring out the window and had never made it to the shower. And at the time, I was really seriously concerned for her and her ability to follow through. But I think about it now. It's like, okay, well, that's kind of good. She actually, I don't know what she was thinking about, but something was filling up her brain. And, you know, for good or for bad. It's not all bad. I guess that's the point. So our brains really can't reflect and evaluate on our own thoughts and interactions when they're focused on particular tasks. We can't, that our brains can only look in when they're not looking out. And so we have to find a way to give our kids a chance to not have them always looking out. I would say personally, I think this is probably the single most important piece of what I'm talking about today. So if you only take one thing away from this, consider whether you're figuring out a way to create and protect this time for your kids. It really is a gift, and I think that's a helpful way to think about it. It's not some kind of punishment to take their phone away. This is a gift you're giving them. So how do we do this? There are a few things that I think have worked well for us. The number one thing I would tell you, this is it. If you take nothing away from this, no technology in your kids' bedroom at night. This is the single biggest gift you can give them. They need a break. They need a reason not to be getting texts and whatever else all night long. And no matter how great your kid is, it's too hard to resist it when it's right in front of you. And even if they can, don't make them. Don't make them exercise that. Give them a break. Take it away. Let them have peace and quiet. When my kids were younger, we actually had a no technology in the bedroom ever rule. And if you have younger kids, I would highly recommend starting there. It's a lot easier to start there than it is to go backwards. But we kept that rule really until eighth grade, when my daughter had a lot of homework and wanted to be doing work in her room. But that meant that any time, you know, and for those of you who don't know me, we have about as much technology in our house as any house could possibly have. My husband is obsessed with technology. We have everything. Everything is wired. Everything is automatic. We have Kindles and iPads and laptops and phones. But none of them went in the bedrooms ever. And really none of them went upstairs, initially when the kids were younger. So that meant that not only could we kind of keep an eye on what was happening with them because it was happening downstairs, but it also meant that when the kids went upstairs to their room, I didn't have to think about it. I didn't have to worry about it, and I didn't have to interrupt them. I didn't have to check on them. I could just know that they were up there coming up with something to do, and whatever it was going to be fine. I would say even in high school, even as your kids are older, there should be some point at night where everything comes downstairs and gets plugged in downstairs. We have a big kind of central thing that has slots for a million devices and plugs coming out of it, and everybody in the house plugs everything in there in the kitchen. If you don't already do this, I know it can feel daunting to present this idea to your children, I think the key is to just get them involved in the planning. Let them have some input into, okay, what time is it that you're going to bring this stuff and plug it in? And it should be something slightly earlier than when they actually turn off the light and go to sleep, because this is the best opportunity to give them space as they are getting ready for bed to read, to work in a journal, if they have. I'm going to talk about that in a minute, to space out and do nothing, to just think a little bit. So I really think that's the easiest way to create some of this time. If you want to create different phone-free or, you know, social media-free times, there actually are some apps now that can limit your child's phone use pretty well. The new Apple iOS includes tools that let you shut down the phone or particular apps at scheduled times of the day. So, you know, you might decide that you want to, if your kid is on Instagram or Snapchat or any of the social media, you can turn just that off. If they want to be doing homework and have their phone or to be able to talk to a friend but not be distracted by other things. There's also an app called OurPact, OurPact, that you can purchase that does similar things. So if you don't have an iPhone, that's a good option. And I've actually looked at that a little bit, and I think it works pretty well also. I already said this, but I would really encourage you to genuinely think about this as a gift you are giving your child. I have struggled with this. My kids are pretty good. They don't abuse this stuff. They're not crazy about it. There have been times where I struggled a little to say, okay, I don't want them to feel like this is some kind of punishment or that I don't trust them. And where I really came around to was it has nothing to do with that. This is a gift I am giving them to protect some time where this is just not on their radar to think about. And no matter how great your kids are, they have friends who are texting at 3:00 in the morning. I don't know why, but they do. So don't expose them to that. Just don't make it an issue. The nighttime is a phone-free, quiet, upstairs in your room thinking about other things. Okay, a couple of other ideas. This goes along the lines of just facilitating this idea of reflection. So I do think that it's kind of great for kids to find some form of journal or diary or some way to reflect on their day if they are so inclined. I did not put this in your handout, but my daughter let me take some pictures of her bullet journal. This is like the far extreme. I can't deal with the time it takes to do this, but my ninth grader is obsessed with this. She kind of initiated this whole thing, went online, and you create all kinds of different pages. You buy a blank journal, and there's like millions of pages, and you decide what you like. So she's got a regular calendar, she's got a weekly log, kind of highlights. The two I really want to point out are, if you look up in the corner, this 2018 in pixels, and this one on the bottom is called Habit Tracker. I think I listed those on the handout, because you can Google, if you just Google that, you'll see a million examples. If you have a kid who is not into flowery handwriting or colored markers, it does not have to look like this. Those are one-page things that you can create. The 2018 in pixels is probably the most basic version of any kind of reflection, but I love it. If you're setting up a chart, and every day of the calendar year, you fill in one little block based on a color scheme, was this an amazing day, a great day, an okay day, a bad day, or a terrible day? Right? That's the most basic way to think about how was my day, and then you end up with this kind of color representation of your year in the end to say, how did I feel about how things went? The habit tracker, I think, also is a really cool. The best thing about this is to see what habits your kid picks to list, because it's up to them to decide, right? Did I do my homework today? Did I practice my instrument? Did I exercise? I clearly a girl after my own heart. She actually put on here, did I socialize? Because she decided she wanted to spend more time with friends. Did I work efficiently? Did I, you know, whatever your kid is interested in. Did I do my push-ups and sit-ups? You know, whatever it is. So I would highly recommend just, and you know, you can't make your kid do this. My younger daughter has no interest in this whatsoever. But it's a good idea to just throw out there as some really basic. It does not have to be this complicated. You also can just have a regular, a regular journal. My younger daughter has a journal. She writes maybe a sentence or two a couple of times a week, and that's it. And even that she's not super into, but she's trying it out. Some other ideas. I think some family daily routines that involve some little bit of reflection can also be useful and just honestly fun. So conversations that you could have at night or at the dinner table. For years when my kids were younger, at the dinner table we would always go around and say, what's the best thing, the worst thing, and the biggest surprise of your day? And it actually, even as an adult, sometimes it's hard to think of what was the best, what was the worst, did I have any surprise, you know. So I think that's a good exercise of, again, this is not deep and taking a lot of time, but it's just getting them reflecting on their day. It could be something you learned today, something nice you did for someone or someone did for you. You can come up with anything, but if you do the same kind of little around the table or as you're getting ready for bed conversation, it's another way to help kids start to think about what happened today, how do I feel about my day. And again, it does not have to be deep or prolonged, right? This is, you're not, your goal is not getting your kid to sit down and think, who am I and who do I want to be? That just comes over time as they start to, kind of put some time into this, these kinds of ideas. One last thing, while it may not seem like an obvious link to those of you who haven't experienced it yourself, I actually think summer camp, it can be an invaluable tool in providing times of reflective quiet with no technology. My daughters go to 7-week camp every summer with no technology. They live in platform tents with no electricity. And while my older daughter in particular loves her phone when she is home, both of them are immediate to say they don't miss it at all when they're at camp. And the truth is they don't miss it because who needs technology when you're living in community? Everybody you want to talk to is right there and you're experiencing things together. As I was thinking about talking about this today, I was joking around with my younger daughter about how much explicit focus is on quiet reflection at camp. You know, they have regular times where someone will read a story or a poem or talk about something, followed by 5 or 10 minutes of just sitting in the quiet thinking. So 150 girls just sitting silently for 5 or 10 minutes. Think about how unusual that is in our regular lives. And I asked my daughter what she thinks about in those quiet times. And she looked a little embarrassed and laughed and said, honestly, sometimes my mind just wanders. And I thought that is like the best answer you could possibly get. That's what you want, is time for them to just wander. Even if you don't do actual, you know, summer camp or overnight camp, I think you can actually replicate some of the benefits by just spending time outdoors without technology. There is something about being in nature, appreciating nature, slowing the pace down a little bit, and obviously getting rid of technology. That I think can facilitate the kind of daydreaming that's so valuable. I mean, think about it, if you just build a campfire and you sit and you stare at the fire, right? It's kind of mesmerizing. It's an opportunity for your mind to wander. I think that kind of thing is really valuable. So I think that's basically it. Let me see if I have anything left here. Just a couple of quotes I put up if they show up here. Each of these is just one way I think we can help our kids become more self-aware, think about who they are, how they fit into the world, and what they can do. So I liked both of these quotes, and especially this idea, it takes courage to grow up and become who you really are. You know, that's a great goal for us to say we want our kids to be who they really are, right, the best version of themselves. And I think that that does take some level of self-reflection over time. So even just the little ways that we can get them used to thinking about that seem like they could be worthwhile. Okay, so I think there's a couple of discussion questions on one of the slides, and there are a few resources that I looked at that are on a slide as well, if you're interested. But I think that's it. Unless I'm assuming we can just talk about questions in groups.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
So,
okay.
I think we just got a small verse. As far as the owl hat, though, I figured I'd share. We started using it this summer, and the goal is to, we tend to, like, not want to hang out together, but, like, 30 minutes just, like, complaining about how awful it was going to be. Thank you.